stay hidden. Or we will not survive.
Leave us alone.
When the time comes, he must be trained.
Like you trained his father? You still want Kenobi? He's gone.
Maybe you've been looking in the wrong places. I want every lowlife and bounty hunter to squeeze him.
Hello, and welcome to episode, checks notes, 47 of Give Me Those Star Wars, part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network, honoring the most stable and fan-friendly space fantasy franchise in popular culture. Couldn't even say that without laughing. I'm Ryan Daly, and joining me this episode to talk about the Disney Plus limited series Obi-Wan Kenobi, more than a year after its release, my fellow Fire and Water all-star and third best friend, the irredeemable Shag. What's up, man?
I was explicitly clear I wanted to be on episode 66. Like, that was the point of me doing this. I thought you were going to fill in a bunch. That's why we waited a year. I thought you were going to fill in a bunch of episodes so we could get to 66.
I tried, and I accidentally deleted all of them. They were all recorded. Just believe it. They were all recorded and then just accidentally deleted.
Execute episode 66.
Oh, I can't wait to say that.
Well, thank you for having me here. I'm really excited to do this. I have come to this a year later and finally got off my butt and watched Obi-Wan just in the last couple of weeks and sat down. My wife, shockingly, what she doesn't care about. Last time she heard about Star Wars, Princess Leia was in a gold bikini. Anyway, so she actually sat down and watched some Andor and then Kenobi with me. So it's been an interesting couple months around the Matthews household.
Very cool, very cool. And I watched the show when it debuted. This is actually my second time reviewing it on a podcast. When it first came out, I guested on an episode of The Lantern Cast with Mark Marble where we talked about it. And I thought about going back and listening to that episode again to find out like what our discussion was, what my headspace was. But I was like, no, I'm gonna do this one more of a blank slate because something, and I can't remember exactly what it was, but for some reason I went back and rewatched the series recently, like about a month ago, and then you kind of hit me up and said, or just kind of mentioned, I think on the Discord or something, that you watched Obi-Wan Kenobi finally, and I'm like, you know what? This is actually worth a discussion, because the second time I watched it, I had a much different appreciation for it. Because, we're just going to kind of get into it now. Like, I think when it first came out, I remember there being three major criticisms for it, beyond my overall feeling that the show was just unnecessary. It was a glamour project for the stars, but it wasn't a story that we needed to have told. And we can come back and discuss whether or not that holds true or not. But I remember the initial criticisms when it came out. I think they were threefold. Two of them were just the product of bad timing, I think. And one of them was, well, Disney, you know that fandom can be toxic. You probably should have anticipated this. So the first major criticism and the fact of bad timing was it came on the heels of the Book of Boba Fett. And in The Mandalorian Season 1 and Season 2, we went back to Tatooine a couple times, and then the Book of Boba Fett, where your main character could go anywhere and has no logical reason to stay on Tatooine, he moves back to Tatooine, and we spend the entire show there for no good goddamn reason. And
a show so boring, I quit watching halfway through, and I miss Mandalorian Season 2.5.
It's my least favorite thing with the name Star Wars on it. Worse than any other movie or show or
So you'll take Life Day over Book of Boba Fett?
Ewok movies, Life Day, whatever. Yeah.
All right.
It was like offensively bad by the end of it, and it just made me angry. Well, okay, how are we going to follow that up? Well, we're following that up with Obi-Wan Kenobi, which everybody just assumed he would be on Tatooine the entire time. So we're like, why? Why are we spending this all of our time here on this planet that Luke told us was not an important place that anyone would want to be? So anyway,
if I can address that real quick. I've been actually thinking about this Tatooine thing for a while, and I think I finally cracked the nut. I figured it out. So Tatooine is essentially the Newark, New Jersey of Star Wars. All right. Everyone thinks it's a dump. Nobody wants to go there. It's the dead end of, or whatever Luke calls it, right? You know, the farthest point from anything interesting. But the fact is, even though everyone feels that way about Newark, everyone does go to Newark eventually because of the damn airport. So in the Star Wars universe, everyone goos to Tatooine eventually because of Mos Eisley. So I think I have come up with a logical explanation.
The Newark Chamber of Commerce is all about that. They like, thank you. Yeah. The second criticism of the show, and again, chalk this up to bad timing, was the show came out right after the Uvalde, Texas shootings. And the show Obi-Wan Kenobi begins with young Jedi children being butchered at their school.
Wow.
I mean,
I didn't even realize the time, because I watched it a year later.
Right. And the warning that comes up on the first episode that says, you know, some of these scenes might be disturbing, that was not on the screen when it first debuted. They added that later.
Oh.
Because, like, I remember just, like, turning on and, like, that those first opening scenes, I was like, what the holy hell, Disney? I'm like, bad timing, bad headspace, but again, it's like, one of the greater sins that Lucas did, I just think, was making it explicit that Darth Vader killed children. I was like, you didn't have to be that overt. The third criticism, unfortunately, this is just the toxic fandom, is one of the main characters in the show, this Inquisitor named Reva, is a black woman, and there's sexism in the Star Wars fandom and racism in the Star Wars fandom. But even still, she's not just a black woman, she is an angry black woman. And even for more liberal-minded fans, that's not always the look that they want to watch. And I just think that's difficult because it's a compelling and necessary part of her character. But it's just, yeah, this is going to turn off some people. Some people aren't going to want to watch this. And unfortunately, they had a loud microphone on Twitter at the time.
Boy, did they ever. Well, and I will say also, her character is very unlikable in the beginning.
I mean, sure. And hard to understand for a while. Like, they don't explain what she's about until the end.
Exactly. So she's incredibly aggressive. She's going against what we believe her job is to be. Her bosses are telling her to do something else. She's got a personal vendetta, and we don't find out what that is till episode 5. So that's one of my criticisms of the show, not the character, because I eventually came to love the character. Mm-hmm. But I think that they needed to leak out her story a little bit earlier, just bits and drips and drabs to explain why she had such a vendetta.
So yeah, we'll come back and we'll talk more about the Reva of it all, but those were like the major concerns and criticisms at the time. And I think part of those, really the first two, the fact that, okay, we're starting on Tatooine again, made me disinterested going into the show. I wasn't in the right headspace for it. And then just the unfortunate timing of like, oh yeah, remind us that the bad guy is a mass child murderer. It was hard to swallow at the time, so I think I was just generally in a bad mood and not really hopeful about Star Wars when I watched the show at the time. But ultimately, my feeling was it was an unnecessary story that was told pretty well.
Okay.
And I, getting back to it, was like I was, did we need to know an Obi-Wan Kenobi adventure with him meeting, like, Darth Vader and him meeting Princess Leia in the span between the prequels? No, I don't think anybody ever expected that. But as a sort of redemption project for both Ewan McGregor and Hayden Christensen, giving them another bite of the apple, especially because when the prequels came out, they were by our generation, certainly reviled, and a lot of people who didn't grow up with those, but were seeing those movies as adults, extremely critical, like vocally hateful, and targeting, unfortunately targeting the stars in some cases. I don't think anybody targeted Ewan McGregor. They knew he was a good actor. Yeah. But Hayden Christensen got a lot of flack and got a lot of hate for his portrayal. But as we see with Star Wars being a generational phenomena, everybody kind of grows up with their own kind of Star Wars. And now we have a generation that grew up with the prequels as their Star Wars, and having the Clone Wars animated series to buttress that, they love these characters.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, if we could see the talent of Ewan McGregor and, to a lesser extent, Hayden put on screen with better writing and better storytelling, better directing, how special could that be? So I think it was, I call it a redemption project, but it's just like another kind of like a reward and a bit of fan service for the fans and for the stars too. And I think this is something that Ewan wanted to do for a long time, knowing what could have been. And certainly like seeing Hayden Christensen at, it was either like Star Wars Celebration or like Disney's like event, like with like thousands of fans cheering for him. He's like, this is not how it was 20 years ago. He's like, this is not what you were shouting at me, was this praise. So, overall, kind of, what was, like, big picture, what were your feelings? And you watched it with your wife, too. What did she think? What did you think? What kind of overall big picture thoughts?
I want to address the Redemption Project idea first, going back to what you were saying. So I would hazard a guess that it was less about Hayden Christensen, probably, from Disney's perspective, is more they wanted Ewan, because they recognize what a big star he is now internationally. And, you know, Hayden was probably a nice-to-have kind of thing, but not necessary in Disney's mind, I imagine. Because, I mean, just seeing Ewan McGregor in this, or really in anything, what a hell of an actor. You know, what a presence. I mean, the guy just shines. And I watched a lot of scenes of the prequels today, just in preparation for this. And, yeah, I mean, the writing is atrocious in that, but you can still – it's like watching someone trying to perform Shakespeare nowadays, because, like, not that Shakespeare's bad writing, but it's hard to understand. Mm-hmm. You know, for the modern person, it's hard. But you watch a really good actor do it, you know, like a David Tennant or someone, and you still get the pathos. You get the emotion, whatever. Leonardo DiCaprio, in fact, did a great job. Mm-hmm. And so it's like watching Ewan McGregor, like, wow, here's a really great actor with really bad words. And so seeing him here in Kenobi, where the script is great, you know, strong – it's incredibly powerful. So, yeah, I think it was absolutely a redemption project. I did like having Hayden Christensen back. I thought that he did a nice job. In fact, so, all right, now I'll come back to that, because I'll go off on a tangent about Vader here. So, yes, I did watch it with my wife. Again, she hasn't cared about Star Wars in a long time. So it was surprised that she wanted to watch it, probably because Ewan's dreamy. I don't know, whatever. And there's a lot of things she enjoyed about the show. Like, you know, specifically, I talk about Hayden for a second. Like, she really got into the whole idea of him in a healing chamber. Like, she really thought that was fascinating. Because, you know, to us, we grew up, you know, the back to tanks and reading about in the comics and the novels and all that. All that's new to her, you know, whatever. So she found all that interesting, and the personal, the injuries and how they informed his rage and stuff like that. So, wow. And she even commented on how she thought as he moved, like, he moved kind of like, oh my gosh, I'm blanking on his name. I've met the man. David Prowse. How David Prowse moved in A New Hope. He moved kind of like David Prowse, which I was like, huh, I didn't think about that.
I kind of thought about that, yeah.
So, big picture, though, I loved it. I probably wouldn't have predisposed because or biased, because I had already heard from several people this, like, they said that this was the best Star Wars project they had seen since Disney Plus had taken over. I guess maybe they didn't like Mandalorian, I'm not sure, whatever, but they said they thought this was the best one yet. Now, Andor hadn't come out at that point, so, but I dragged my feet. Watched Andor, loved it, and I wanted more. So that's when I went to Kenobi, and yeah, I went in expecting to like it. And as someone that can't stand the prequels, I was very surprised and really enjoyed it.
I've watched the prequels a lot recently, just because my son Reese now loves Star Wars. He's known about Star Wars pretty much from birth, you know.
Zygote.
But he recently got into the Lego Star Wars video game, which is freaking wonderful. Like, it's like, just play that forever. Through that, like, he's meeting all these new characters and he wants to watch. So we watched the movies and he loves the prequels. And as critical as I was, you know, being able to watch them now through a child's eyes, you see them differently. And it's kind of an interesting experience. I'm much more forgiving.
I tried that with episode one with my kids. Not so much.
I am much more forgiving of that one. I like that one a lot more. But yeah, getting to your point, like, yeah, I rewatched parts of episode three recently, and like, it's like, this is not good writing. But and like, Ewan McGregor is way too good for this part. he stands out. Like, you know how you can usually see like what the bad thing in a movie that stands out like a sore thumb. It's like, oh, he's the good thing. He's like the one good thing. It's like, you don't belong here. It's kind of like Good Will Hunting. It's like when Ben Affleck is like, you're too good for us. Get the hell out of here. You shouldn't be in South Boston with us. That, yeah, having seen it and then kind of watching the show again recently and just being able to enjoy it more. And you're right, like, Ewan's performance, the emotional journey he goes on, and we see all these things, the conflict and where he is at the beginning of the show, which I, again, like, fans were like, I think at the time fans just, like, didn't know what to expect. It's like, well, what else could you expect? He's a broken man. His only job is just, like, watching this kid grow up and making sure that he's safe. Everything, like, his whole world has been shattered. The life that he thought he would have, this whole, everything that he'd been taught to believe in was destroyed. His best friend / surrogate child, he had to fight, and basically he thought he killed him and everything like that, and all this stuff is going on. So then to be given this new mission where he has to go and rescue a young Princess Leia, which I didn't think that story could ever work.
I didn't see that coming, because I didn't know that she was such a big part of the show. And also, like you, I didn't think it would work either, but damn, it was great.
Yeah, it was great. And then to see them together and have, like, this father-daughter type of relationship, like, when she says, she's like, you've been lying to me about my family. She's like, are you my real dad? Mm-hmm. I'm like, whoa, where are we going to go with this? And he's like, I wish I was. I wish I could tell you I was.
It's because he was thinking about Natalie Portman.
And you see it, like, when he's like, when he describes her, like, he, like, in front of the stormtroopers, he's describing this girl's mother, and she, like, she knows it. Like, I thought the actress who played Leia was great in most of her scenes, as just kind of like feeling like, yeah, you can see where, like, they kind of played up like maybe like her force ability was just this natural intuitiveness where she could read people, and she just knew more like who was lying to her and who was telling the truth.
I kind of got that vibe, too. I'm glad you mentioned it. I couldn't put it into words, but I felt like there was some force sensitivity thing going on. Yeah, Vivian Lyra Blair was great as the little kid. Like, I totally – and my wife actually commented on this. She loved her portrayal. She thought that, you know, the little smarty pants, very independent, you know, and she felt like it was honest to Carrie Fisher's portrayal. And now she said more like a big brother, little sister, not father-daughter, but kind of saw the brother-sister sort of thing. You know, the bickering, putting each other in each other's place. I mean, it was really great. Yeah. And here's another interesting contrast is my wife noticed the strong difference between Leia and Luke in this age. Like, Leia is this strong, independent kid training to be a senator, and Luke's like an idiot child. I mean, he's just, you know, he's playing like space – ship, whatever, you know. Extreme differences between these two children.
I know, and I'll come to that. That's one thing that I wish they would have changed about the ending, and about Luke, and maybe making him a little bit more proactive, but we'll come back to that one. But yeah, and then back to Obi-Wan, but like, then the realization when he finds out that Darth Vader / Anakin is still alive, and how haunted he is by that and everything, and like, actually like almost like seeing ghosts throughout. And then in, like, the end of the third act, when he actually sees Darth Vader, and you're right, like, when he, like, comes on the screen, and he's, like, terrorizing that village. And, yeah, he's moving like David Prowse, but, like, he also felt like a Michael Myers, Jason Voorhees, like, killer, just, like, coming out of the shadows. And the way that whole sequence was filmed, when he's chasing him through, like, this mining, like, this salt mines... it's all in the dark. Like, the only light you see is, like, from their lightsabers or the glow on Darth Vader's chest plate from, like, 20 yards away. And it's terrifying. It felt like I was watching, like, a horror movie, like one of those slasher picks or something. And the way Vader is stalking him, and I'm like, yeah, this is powerful, because, like, Obi-Wan, like, and I again, this was, like, a criticism. Fans were like, Obi-Wan kicked his ass last time. Why is he, like, so messed up? It's like, he's like this. You are. He is not in the mental space for this fight. He is, of course, so he gets his butt kicked.
And, well, was he still cut off from the Force at that point?
Well, he hadn't really been doing anything. Like, the only thing he had done with the Force was, like, when he reached out and he saved Leia from falling off the building.
That's right. That's when he used the Force for the first time. Yeah. Okay, right.
But
right.
Beyond that, he was kind of, he was, like, not with it, not mentally, or, yeah, to have him be, like, terrified, stalking him as this killer coming out of the shadows with this revenge data for him, and then he almost burns him alive, and then luckily he's saved again, so...
Well, don't move on from there, because okay. I got stuff I want to say. So, yes, Vader stalking through the streets, just murdering people to draw Kenobi out was a good example. Michael Myers terrifying, right? That was horrifying. Then we're going to diverge here, because when Vader confronts Kenobi, I actually feel like that first fight, now this is in episode 3, was really undramatic. Like, it's just them running around piles of sand. Like, it's the most boring setting. Every Star Wars fight is usually in a really interesting setting. The setting was not interesting. And I had to go back and rewatch it today to figure out what was sitting wrong with me. And it was the camera work. The camera work was really dull. They did a lot of long, long, far away shots, which is an intentional technique when you're filming something to slow things down, to make things seem small, to rob something of its intensity. You do a far away shot. And so a lot of those scenes really didn't. I didn't feel much. Now the fire was absolutely cool. It was absolutely cool. And it was a great idea. You know, Vader's going to burn him just like he burned him. And then like the droid grabs Ben and starts to get away, and Vader just watches him go away. Like Vader could have just force grabbed the droid. So I that whole fight.
The ending
doesn't work for me.
Yeah, the ending was anticlimactic. I'll grant that. However, when you say that droid, you're talking about Ned B, who is the best new character in the series. I love that damn droid.
He was pretty good. He's pretty good.
Anyway. Yeah, I don't know. Like, in terms of... I guess if I watched again and paid more attention to, like, the camera angles, I could look at it. But, like, in terms of, like, the blankness or the boringness of the setting, I just took it to be sort of, like... dreamlike and sort of nightmarish, that it's more about just like the overwhelming presence of the darkness, and that's where kind of Obi-Wan was. He just felt surrounded by dark and a little bit like drowning, like he's in over his head.
Now the stalking is fair. I mean, the light, like you said, the lighting by the lightsabers was great. The stalking was interesting. The scene as it was put together didn't hold the intensity for me. But, you know, maybe I'm wrong. It does happen once a century or so.
Yeah. But he survives. He's pulled out of the fire by the droid and by his new pseudo girlfriend. And he's taken, he recovers. They both do, Obi-Wan and Anakin, they both do their Bacta chamber dives. And that's when Leia is kidnapped by the Inquisitors and taken to the Fortress Inquisitorius, which I guess is a major setting of one of the new video games, like Star Wars Fallen Order. You actually have, like, a whole thing in there. And this is where, like, when we're at episode 4, this is now when Obi-Wan gets his groove back, because this is more like a Clone Wars type of thing, where he sneaks in there and they have this whole rescue mission, and he's much more of a badass now, like, taking out stormtroopers and droids. And I was kind of, like, feeling, I was like, okay, did we need this? Is this more fluff? But it's a really fun and really exciting episode to see Obi-Wan on a mission like this. I actually think maybe the last two episodes, 5 and 6, are the ones that feel padded out to me.
Interesting.
When they're trapped on the planet and they're just waiting, you know Vader is going to come there and, like, wait them out. But then they manage to escape, and then Obi-Wan has to take off on his own to separate from the escaping rebels, knowing that Vader is obsessed and will chase him and let the rebels escape. My thinking after I saw the series was, I was like, that was 6 episodes that could have been a great 2-hour movie. I kind of think this could have been 2 different 2-hour movies. There were 2 different stories here that I wish. And, like, because we haven't gotten to Reva yet, I really liked her story, but I felt like she either could have been the protagonist in her own series about the Inquisitors, or her story in Obi-Wan's could have been something completely separate from Obi-Wan discovering, like, that Anakin and Vader were still alive. And this could have been, like, a second season or a second movie.
Couple things to bounce off of things you said a second ago leading to this altogether is, first off, my biggest criticism of the series is that it feels not padded, but it just feels every bit like it's a constant runaround. Obi-Wan goes to this place. He has some sort of harrowing adventure. He barely escapes and offers to sacrifice himself and then moves on to the next place. And when he gets there, he has a little adventure, very harrowing, again, offers to sacrifice himself, and then barely escapes. And it's just, it keeps happening, rinse and repeat. And I'm like, okay, I get that's the nature of serialized storytelling, but this is a miniseries, right?
You know, right, like they didn't have to budget it for six episodes.
Well, okay, that's the other part of the conversation is they did have to budget it for six episodes. That's the way these things work. In order to make it work and package it and all, they had to. That's why Reva's story is necessary, because there's not enough by Kenobi, with Kenobi himself, to do six episodes. There's just not. And so that's why they need Reva's story, because it is interesting and helps them pad it all out. And actually interweaving her story with Kenobi's, where Kenobi convinces her to attack Vader, is great. So I love that Reva's story is in there. I've heard people say, like yourself, saying that it could have been separate. I think it actually needed to be together to make it that length, and it helps buffet each other. I just didn't like the constant going, you know, again, the repeating pattern of going somewhere, barely escaping, going somewhere, barely escaping, just over and over and over.
Yeah. All right, well then, getting to Reva, I liked her from the beginning in one sense, that like Kylo Ren, I like seeing a dark side Force user that is actually clearly visibly emotional. And okay. Like you see the intensity of their anger, because we're always told that the dark side and the dark side of the Force and the Sith, they're ruled by their anger. But it's always a very quiet, controlled, understated like rage that Vader has and that Count Dooku and Darth Maul. And the thing I loved about Kylo Ren was he threw temper tantrums because of his emotions. And with Reva, I liked that she was so, like, she would shout and she would scream and she would get pissed off, like, at her bosses and everything like this. I was like, yeah, if, like, your whole, if what's feeding you and empowering you is, like, this anger and this hatred and this fear, it's like, that should probably be visible on your person. So I liked being able to see that. But there was also just, like, the way they dragged her character out and the way they gave us information, it's like, okay, I feel like I don't really have a solid hook on, like, what is her angle? And then to see, oh, okay, it's the ambition isn't about just impressing Vader. She actually wants to assassinate Vader. It's all about getting close enough to him where she can kill him out of revenge because of what she witnessed when she was a kid, as a youngling in the Jedi Temple, when he slaughtered everyone around her, and even slaughtered her, and even tried to kill her. Like, her whole mission has been this revenge quest, and then to see that play out. So I liked that reveal, but I thought the execution was just kind of weak when she finally made her move, and then they had their little battle. I thought her lightsaber battle with Vader was cool, and I like how easily he was just like, yeah, you're not up to this. But once he stabbed her, and they let her live just because of the plot, and then revealed that the High Grand Inquisitor was still alive, and it's like, oh yeah, because he's in Rebels, and we need him alive for Rebels. Like, what was the point of trying to kill him off? Like, that felt like tacked on. And then when she goes after Luke in the last episode, which I liked, and I liked her like going to the farm at night, because for one thing, I love that it showed Owen and Beru as like active, like, oh, we're farmers. We can defend our farm. It's like, we're used to having to fight off Tusken Raiders and other like pirates and stuff like that. Like, we'll defend our land. The way they fought back and like gave her hell, like, I wish like maybe if she didn't have a lightsaber at that point, like if she was like coming, because there's like they had to be very judicious about how to make sure that this wouldn't be something that Luke would either remember or like would be like scarred by or something that like it would inform his life later on. But like, I don't know. I wish when we saw him like sneaking around and getting on top of their hut or the like the outside of their house, their farmstead, pretending to be a speed racer or a pod racer or something like that. I just thought, like, how cool would it have been if, like, instead of him just running into the mountains or something and her chasing him, when she's, like, going after him, if he got into, like, their speeder or something and just rammed her and just, like, drove into her, but also, like, crashed and knocked himself unconscious so that, like, he would be, like, out of it so that you could still explain like how like he doesn't know that she's like this Sith witch who's trying to kill him, but also like give him like show that yeah, even as a boy, Luke had this affinity and he could defend himself and the Force was with him at that age.
Whole piloting angle would make
sense. So I don't know, something like that. I just wish we could have gotten to make him a little bit more active and capable of himself, even as a child, because we see that with Leia.
Yeah, but it does play in nicely to him just being a complete idiot.
Yeah.
You know, when we see him in A New Hope, but he has to go through this pretty big journey for him. But about the Reva stuff. Thanks for asking, by the way. Reva made the most critical mistake in the fight with Vader, which is you don't ignite your lightsaber and attack Vader. You just simply walk up, you point it at him, and then turn it on so it extends through his heart. That's right. The only way you kill Vader.
Right.
So I remember watching it the first time when she does it. I'm like, why didn't you just push it against his back? Anyway, I do like in the fight, like you said, Vader didn't take it seriously kind of thing. Like for me, though, and again, it goes back to David Prowse's performance. Vader moves a lot like David Prowse's version in New Hope. Like he's not putting a lot of effort into his defense. He doesn't have to. It's like he knows he's a badass, so he doesn't have to be all cool. And he's not like the Rogue One version, you know, who's like practically bouncing off the walls like a whirling dervish. He's just like, yeah, casually blam, 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 you know, simple movements. And I love that about that. So the fight with Reva was great, I thought. I loved her character. I agree. Absolutely. They should have doled more of it out earlier. I do think that. But again, I love the way you described her rage fueling her. I hadn't thought about it that way. But yeah, her rage fueling her from the dark side is a great idea. And maybe that's what maybe that is what made me find her compelling. Let's see. I'm trying to go through all the stuff you said. Vader stabbing her and her living was very confusing. Like my wife had to stop me. She's like, wait a minute. She's dead. What is she doing on Tatooine? And I'm like, she lived. She's like, no, we saw her die. I'm like, well, we saw her get stabbed. And she's like, yeah, but on the side where the heart is. I'm like, yeah, usually in movies that means the person's dead, but I guess she lived. So yeah, they could have done a better job of showing her as wounded and not dead. Now, here's the part where I piss off all the hardcore animation fans. I think the Grand Inquisitor is freaking stupid. I couldn't stand it. Like I've watched the first two or three seasons of Rebels. Like I lose track. I don't remember where. Basically, I watched up until Thrawn showed up. It's not that I disliked it. I just other things got in the way. So I watched quite a bit of it. I couldn't stand the Grand Inquisitor in that. I thought he was a dumb character. I thought he was even dumber in this series. You know, all the Inquisitors, with the exception of her, were like on Quaaludes. Like they were so like mellow and like, no, we have to follow the rules. Like, you know, they're like paperwork pushing Jedi hunters. Like, just doesn't track for me. So I liked her that much more, and I hated the Grand Inquisitor that much more. And when I found out he wasn't dead, I was like, oh, whoop-de-doo. Okay. So, yeah, I didn't care for that. But I think that she was a fascinating character, and I love, again, that Obi-Wan, he didn't manipulate her, but he used her in a partnership, if you will, to get to Vader. And I thought that was great.
Yeah. I agree with you. Like, in general, I don't like the Inquisitors. I think they're overused just because the fans want to see more red lightsabers and stuff, and they can only use Vader so much. Mm-hmm. Like, that's kind of like if you only have two Sith and you want to be able to see more, you know, characters who are like that, then you have to create something else. Like, yeah, I would have rather had, an elite type of, like, stormtrooper assassination squad that are, like, trained with, like, something like this than the Inquisitors. But
like the ones in Mandalorian. Like, the robotic ones. Yeah, that'd be great. Now, before we leave Owen and Beru, I got one more thing to say.
Okay, I wanted to come back to them, so yeah.
Okay, the only thing missing for Owen and Beru is I wanted their story from Troops, which was that parody of Cops. Folks, if you've never watched Troops, which is a parody of Cops, it's one of the earliest like Star Wars fan videos I remember.
Yeah, oh God, that goes back to like 2000
or 98 maybe, I don't know.
Maybe,
anyway, go find it. Or it is freaking hysterical, and there's a great Owen and Beru, which explains their death even 10 times better than A New Hope. And that's the only thing that was missing, was a drunken domestic brawl between the two of them.
Yeah. I think maybe I was just expecting more from them, because I was expecting Tatooine to be like the setting of like the whole show.
Mm-hmm.
And especially with the actor who plays Owen, I can't think of his name now, but... he's a big time actor. Like he was nobody when he filmed episode 3, but yeah, he's like a big award nominated actor now. He's an
old, oh wow, cool.
I cannot think of his name, but anyway, yeah, I thought his portrayal was really cool. I thought we would see a little bit more. I am glad that, yeah, just the little bit in episode 6 when they got to defend their farm, and they're throwing punches at Reva, and like when Beru like slams something at her head when she walks through that door.
If it wasn't a jug of blue milk, it's wasted effort.
It should have been. She just threw that right in her eyes.
Owen has a great talk in, it might be episode 1 even, I'm not sure, with Owen. I'm sorry, with Obi-Wan, though. Mm-hmm. He's telling Obi-Wan to stay away from Luke, and he has that great dig, like, oh, yeah, you're going to train him like you did his dad? I mean, it's like there's a really good moment where Owen almost genuinely cares for Luke. You know, you almost see that Owen thinks it's his duty to make sure Luke is raised to have like a normal life, you know, and because Owen's a dick in A New Hope. You hate him. You just think he's some generic asshole farmer. And so here you see Owen again with a duty, and it's like, oh, OK, maybe I get this guy. All right.
Well, yeah. And then when Reva's coming after him, she's like, you love him like he's your own. And Owen's like, he is mine. And he treats it that way. And I always think, like, one of the more understated and kind of often forgotten things about Owen, like, going back to his portrayal in Star Wars, when you're like, yeah, this guy's an asshole, but because he's the one keeping our main character from being what he wants to be. So we think of him as, you know, the obstacle. But it's that scene when Beru goes, he has too much of his father in him, and Owen's like, that's what I'm afraid of. It's like, yeah, he loves it. He doesn't want him to turn out like this. He wants to, it's all about keeping him safe and what he thinks he is doing. So,
if anyone out there has ever had to be a step parent, and I have, you understand the duty of raising someone else's kid, and there's a lot of pressure there. And I'm not saying what Owen did was right here and there and every choice he made, but it's not a tough job. I mean, it's not an easy job. It's one of the hardest jobs you'll ever do.
On the subject of step parents, Jimmy Smits is a terrific actor, and I grew up watching him on NYPD Blue. Loved him. Loved him.
L.A. Law for me, baby.
He was on L.A. Law. He was fantastic in that, too.
Was he asleep in this show?
So, this is his third time playing Bail Organa now. Like, he was in episodes 2 and 3, I guess. He had a small moment in Rogue One, and then he's in this. I don't know if it's him or if it's, like, what they give him, but, like, do they want him to be the most boring character in the galaxy? Okay, his daughter just got kidnapped, and he goes to Obi-Wan, like, Obi-Wan is the only one who can rescue, like, you, with all the resources of a freaking senator, you could try to rescue her, too. Like, you could go with Obi-Wan, actually have a heroic journey in this. Like, show Bail Organa doing something other than just standing there. And that's all he does in these 3 movies. He just stands there.
Well, if you really think about it, it's all he did in New Hope as well, until he got blown up.
Yeah, exactly.
He did the same thing. He called Obi-Wan for help. That's his power move. You know, that's his power action move if he was an action figure, is to call Obi-Wan for help.
And it's got to be a waste of Jimmy Smits' time and talent.
Right. This guy's phenomenal, and there we go.
Yeah, getting to the whole thing like with Leia at the end, with the way they're trying to raise her within the Alderaanian court, but then like when she's like on this whole event, she's like, when she asks the one on Dara, she's like, can you teach me how to shoot, or give me a gun,
right.
And like by the end of it, she's in like her fine Alderaanian like outfits, but she's wearing like combat boots and she's got a holster on her hip. It's like, there's no gun, but she's got the holster. It's like, yep, this is the Princess Leia we're gonna see.
Now, also, by the way, Alderaan in live action, first time. It's not what I imagined, but it works. Like, it totally was like, yeah, this I can see this is Alderaan.
We see it for like 5 seconds at the end of episode 3.
Really? Is that one of those celebration scenes or something?
No, at the end, when like we see Bail Organa bringing baby Leia to his wife, and then just like sitting. So we kind of get like it's all like just a CGI like shot of like the city and the mountains and stuff.
Wait, the prequels was CGI? That's weird, huh?
Go figure.
We haven't talked about the big fight between Kenobi and Vader in episode 6.
Okay, the final battle. So
now, by contrast, the camera work here was exceptional. Okay, I watched both episode 3's fight and episode 6's fight today with the idea of like, how was this shot? You know, and the camera work is much better, and maybe it's intentional. Maybe they wanted three not to be as exciting. I don't know. So, but in episode six, the camera work is much better, a lot more close-ups. It really ramps up the intensity. You know, it's a great fight, obviously. You know, when Obi-Wan's throwing those rocks like a freaking boss, I mean, that was incredible. He cracks open the helmet, which is totally a Marvel, you know, cinematic universe power move, is that you can see the guy under the mask. You know, it's a Tony Stark power move there.
I loved him using the hilt of the lightsaber to smash the controls on Vader's chest plate, on like all the breathing apparatus and everything, when he's just using the hilt just like a cudgel to just smash those things.
Well, yes and no. It was badass to watch, but the other part of me is like, why didn't he freaking turn it on when he's doing it? And Vader would be dead. Because this is the second time he's had a chance to kill evil Vader, and he didn't. He walked away both freaking times.
And like, I think he was going to kill him until he saw Anakin under the mask, and then he froze again. Yeah.
But, well, he saw what was left.
Right, right.
He didn't see Anakin. He saw what was left, which was a great distinction. So you notice the line, right?
I noticed the line, and it is a really good line. I like it, but it also feels like one of those unnecessary apology lines when Anakin says, "You didn't kill me. You didn't kill Anakin Skywalker. I did." And I was like, okay, I like that line. It makes sense. It works. But it also feels like one of those lines for like the people who are like, well, Obi-Wan lied to Luke when he said, like they make a big deal. Like, he lied when he said, like, that Vader killed his face. It's like, yeah, of course he lied. Like, you don't have to, like, this isn't a complicated thing, like, to understand. Like, when you meet this kid and you need his help, you don't tell him that his father is the right-hand man of Space Hitler.
Well, from a certain point of view.
But again, it's like, and the people who have a tough time grasping that, it's like, yeah, this shouldn't be hard to understand, but yeah, I like the line, and I like the way Hayden delivered it. I loved the lighting.
It was a 6-hour miniseries for that one line.
Yeah.
I mean, it kind of was in a little bit of a way.
It kind of was. But I love the whole lighting in that scene, like when you see the crack in his face, so you can see Hayden underneath there, and the blue glow from Obi-Wan's lightsaber when you see a little bit of Anakin still in there in his torture. And then when you see, he's like, nope, he's all Vader. It switches to the red light of Vader's lightsaber, like kind of on his skin.
I didn't notice that. Wow.
Yeah, that effect was like really, really well done.
That's awesome. It was very effective. And again, cracking the mask, Tony Stark style, was absolutely the right move. It was because you need to see the actor's face. You need to see his, you know, whatever yellow contact lens. You have to have that connection. And it really was perfect. It was great.
Clearly, they spent a lot of money on other things. So when it came to Qui-Gon Jinn, they could only film him for like a half an hour. They got him on set in costume, and they're like, you have three lines of dialogue. This is all you have to say. We can get like two takes of each of these lines.
Well, I did want to ask about that. Do we know for sure? Did they actually, or did they just CGI that?
No, he filmed it. He got on costume and filmed it. But like, I'm sure it was one day. Like, it wasn't anything. But like, but I think they probably and I don't know if it was a scheduling thing or if it was a budget thing. I'm sure they probably would have wanted more, because I expected it to be a thing where like when during the episode 6 battle, when Obi-Wan is buried under the rocks, like that would be the moment when Qui-Gon comes to him
and says,
"So you're in a kind of a tough spot," and does kind of like, you know, "Come on, Coach, I need a pep talk here," and that's when he comes back.
Interesting. Well, you know, it is interesting too that, because you know, the episode 3 ends of the movies, that is not the episode of the series. Episode 3 ends with a promise that Qui-Gon's coming back. So it is. I kind of like that it ends here with that as well. I thought there was a nice synchronicity to that. That, you know, the prequel ends with this. This series ends with that. And also, I mean, the fact is Obi-Wan again has shut himself off from the Force for all these years.
Right.
So it's sort of fitting. By the way, you know what just occurred to me as I said those words is Luke did the same thing in Last Jedi. He cuts himself off from the Force, which got all kinds of fans worked up and pissed off.
Yeah.
But I didn't hear anyone complain about it when Obi-Wan did it. So interesting.
Again, that gets into a whole other thing about The Last Jedi, and
true.
I wish Luke's story was not a repeat of Obi-Wan's story. However, I will grant that it is the best acting either character gets. Like, Mark Hamill's best performance is that version of Luke Skywalker, and Ewan McGregor does a fantastic job at this point in Obi-Wan's career. So there's something about having your character at the lowest point of their life that's dramatic, shall we say.
That's how you tell stories. So there's one other character we didn't mention, Haja.
I was going to say, no, I told you how much I liked Ned B, the labor droid. Freaking love that droid. Haja, yeah, it was great. Played by our buddy.
I can't say, I'm going to try and say his name. I'm not going to get it right, but it's Kumail Nanjiani. Yes. Yeah. So I went through a bit of a journey with his character. Like, when he first showed up, my first reaction was, yay, I love this actor. He's always awesome. And then after a few scenes with him, I'm like, all right, this is silly. No, I'm not happy about this. This has gone silly. And then by the end, I don't know, I bought into it. I'm like, yay, I love this character. He's so funny. He's the C-3PO of this miniseries. He really is. And that's okay.
I remember in like one of the fan releases, they're like, so who are you? Who are you playing or something? And he's like, I play a type of character that we have never seen in Star Wars before. And I'm like, okay, what could that be? And then like all these people were saying like he's a Jedi or like he's like a runaway Jedi or a Jedi on the run or something. And then like watching it, it's like okay, but is he a Jedi that is like sold out and he's just like using his power just for personal gain? I was like, oh no, he's just a con man. I was like, this is brilliant.
Well, he's half con man, half Kiox. From the West End Games? What was it? Don Quixote.
Chaotic, oh yeah, yeah.
Jedi, where he kind of believes that he's really in touch with the Force. I mean,
yeah. Oh, I love that. And then yeah, and he has like his own little quest at the end when he talks. He's like, oh boy. He's like, I've done some things that I'm not proud of. He's like, how does he say? He's like,
I can't remember the bits of it, but it was. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, he had a good exchange with it. He's like, you know, my word probably doesn't mean anything to you. And Obi-Wan's like, your word means enough. He's like, I know you're a good man at heart. So
he was a nice journey for his character. Yeah.
Did you know in episode 3, when the mining planet, whatever, when they take the truck to, when they're hitchhiking on the back of the truck and the stormtroopers jump on with them, that weird alien that picks them up, like the truck driver that carries them?
Yeah, it was like a star-nosed mole, right?
Yeah, do you know who voiced that thing?
I did when I watched it, but
it was Zach Braff from Scrubs.
Yes, okay, yes. You can recognize it, yes.
Yeah.
That was so. That was the second runaround planet, by the way,
right.
Of running around. But yeah, so the star-nosed mole thing I thought was great because it was very Star Wars esque to pick some animal and make an alien race out of it. But I had forgotten who did the voice. That's awesome.
And I like the bit of characterization that was an alien that was actually on the side of the Empire that betrayed them to the Empire.
I had that conversation with my wife today because she was asking about why, you know, we're talking about Luke. And wanting to go to the academy, and what does the academy mean? And different people have guessed certain things, and certainly books have said one thing, and this and that. And she's like, why would he want to go for the Empire? I'm like, well, you got to realize, it's not like he wanted to go train to fly planes for the bad guy. He just wanted to learn to go fly planes.
Right.
And nowadays, in the real world, if you wanted to go fly planes, the quickest way is join the Air Force, right? I mean, that's right. The quickest, fastest way to fly airplanes. And so that's all he wanted. So this guy is sort of similar. It's like, the Empire, it, to him, is probably not good or bad. It's just the government. It's just the law, and he's trying to stay on the right side of it. So I don't see him as a bad guy or even a collaborator. He's just a guy who thinks he's following the law.
Yeah, I've always taken that line from Luke as a retcon that got like misunderstood or unfortunately just like translated a certain way. Because I always took the academy not as the Imperial Academy, but as just a flight academy, like a flight school. Like to be a commercial or like any kind of municipal pilot, you have to be training. And there's like a certain school for that. It would be like on all these different planets. And somewhere along the way, either it was in like a novel or a comic or one of the role-playing game supplements, that became the Imperial Academy. And they became synonymous with each other. And I was like, yeah, he was going to join the Empire. I was like, I don't know. I don't think so, but...
So I was just extrapolating that to the Star-Nosed Mole, where I just think that...
No,
I
agree.
Yeah, yeah. It was just trying to follow the rules.
Yeah.
Overall, I just felt like it was a big win for me. You know, like, I think the shining moments for me in the overall miniseries, and we can dive more deeper into specific topics, that's fine, but just I felt like Reva was a shining star. You know, by the way, we haven't said the actress's name.
Moses Ingram.
Yeah. Moses Ingram. She was great. She really was. Yeah. And I feel terrible for the stuff that happened to her afterwards, because she was a shining star, again, in the story.
And I legitimately hope we see more of her at some point. Like, I want to know more about that character. Where they leave her is kind of a broken shell, but she is a trained Force user, like Jedi Sith, like apprentice, who now has no place on either side. So, like, where does she go after that?
Interesting. Okay, that's going to lead me to a question in a second. The other shining star is that buddy relationship between Kenobi and Leia was just really, really enjoyable. So all of that leads me to the next question, which is there a season two here? You know, like, do you feel like there's room? Or is the Reva story something different? Does Reva get a book? Or are you saying that we could have a season two with Moses Ingram and Ewan McGregor going off and having a completely different adventure?
I don't see a season two, but, I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to one. Like, again, like with as successful as this, I didn't think this story needed to be told. Mm-hmm. But they did it in such a way that was pretty impressive, and I enjoyed what we got. So if they did that again, sure. I want to know more about Reva, and I would like to know where she goes from here, whether that's in the book or a comic or some other story. Yeah, however they flesh her out, whatever, I would just be curious about that.
I see it. Obi-Wan and Reva protecting little Poe Dameron's parents.
Performances wise, like, Ewan McGregor did a great job, and like, this was the Obi-Wan that we've always wanted to see in a certain way. Like, this was the adventures of young Obi-Wan, even though he's quite middle-aged at this time. like, seeing him going undercover and trying to kind of, like, be, you know, anonymous and a shell of himself, being uncertain around this child, and then having this budding friendship with her and this camaraderie with Leia, which you never expect. You never think there's a scene between Obi-Wan and Leia, because of her message to him sounds like they've never encountered each other.
Mm-hmm.
But again, somehow the show makes it work, and it's a great little way of revealing new nuggets of information about both of them. So I thought that was great. The chapter 4, which is the Fortress Inquisitorius, which seems like that, like, an episode that you could have easily taken out. That was just like a padding one. But that's also, it's just a really fun, like, kind of Clone Wars style adventure of Obi-Wan type of episode, so I really like that one. Seeing Obi-Wan and Vader fighting each other with the emotions of it, seeing Vader being terrifying and just, like, killing civilians just to draw out Obi-Wan. There's just a lot of really, really good stuff in the show. There are parts where it's kind of clunky. I think it's padded and a little fat and could have been trimmed down an episode or two. But it's, yeah, it was enjoyable. Like, I was, when the first time I saw it, I was just kind of in a bad headspace for Star Wars, but with a lot of distance now, watching it fresh, it's a very enjoyable series. I think they did some good stuff with this.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I think Andor is probably my favorite of the Disney Plus series right now, and I'm still undecided about Mandalorian, partially because I haven't finished 2.5 or 3, but I would watch this again. I would totally, and some of the other stuff I wouldn't bother. This I would totally watch again, and I think it was worthwhile. And again, Ewan McGregor, what a hell of an actor. Wow. Just what a catch. And Disney was lucky that they were able to talk him into it, or maybe they just had a big enough checkbook. I'm not sure which.
Yeah, and I mentioned on the last episode, however many months or years ago that was, but Andor is still the high water, is still like the high point for quality of, like, writing and storytelling in terms of that, like, awards bait, like, quality, just like all around. Like, that's something that sort of transcends the genre in terms of being this science fiction story and this political allegory. And I like that for its quality. But what I'm missing in Andor is the sense of the swashbuckling pirate, like, tales nature and everything. And that's what you get in Obi-Wan. And that's what you get in, for all of its faults, a movie like The Rise of Skywalker, which is objectively dumb. But I cannot tell you how much that movie reminds me of some of those Del Rey Star Wars novels from the 90s that I grew up with, when we didn't have any other Star Wars books. right. And about like how like the characters were just so angsty and like just like driven by like these melodramatic scenes and emotions that did not follow any kind of like storytelling logic, but that's just, you didn't care because it was Star Wars, and that's what that movie reminds me of. So I have a appreciation for that movie despite its flaws. So.
So you just compared Rise of Skywalker to The Courtship of Princess Leia. Got it.
Oh, yeah, sure. Or the, like the Jedi Academy trilogy. You
know? Right. Oh, my God.
So. All right.
There better thoughts. Be a damn questionnaire.
I was going to say, any final thoughts before we move on to the Galactic Questionnaire?
I got so tired of waiting for you to say something, I gave my final thoughts like 10 minutes ago.
Cool. All right, then... as near as I can tell, this is Galactic Questionnaire 6.0.
Yes!
All right. Three questions. The first question.
Han shot first. No, wait. Han never... No. Han only shot.
You ruined that one.
All right.
All right. Your favorite movie in each of the trilogies.
Okay. Empire Strikes Back. Battle for Endor. That wasn't a trilogy. There was just two of those. Then... Attack of the Clones. Throw your tomatoes now.
Wow.
Attack of the Clones.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll take a bold stand there. Okay. Then probably Last Jedi.
So you're all about episode 2. You're all about the middle chapter.
I guess I am. I didn't put that together till now. Yeah, I am about the second chapter across all of those. Yeah.
Because I'm probably about the first chapter in all of them, but yeah, okay.
All right. Fair enough. You're allowed to be wrong.
All right, question 2. This one was all for you. I asked this one just for you. I don't think anybody else will get this question. Mara Jade or Shira Bree?
Son of a bitch. Wow. I mean, you just like sucker punched me. Like I was expecting one thing and then it went this whole other way. Damn. Okay. I'm going to take the shortcut and say Mara Jade because she's probably not going to kill me in the middle of the night. So I'm going to go with my – it is impossible to choose between the two. But if I follow the strict rules of their personality, Mara Jade is the one I'll live the longest with. So there we go.
All right.
And they're both incredibly sexy as hell. Oh, my God. Wow. Just got hot in here. Whew.
All right. And the third question. Your daughter calls you frantic. The DJ they hired for her school dance didn't show up. Which band do you hire as a replacement? Oh, Figuring no. Dan and the Modal Nodes or the Max Rebo Band?
Okay, is this the original Max Rebo Band or the special edition Max Rebo Band?
The original one. That's just a 3-piece.
Oof, okay. Then probably the Max Rebo Band, the original version. Not the special edition version. I don't need Jedi Rocks up in that place.
All right. Very cool.
Those are awesome. Those are fantastic questions. I love those. Thank you so much.
All right, Shaq. Thank you for coming back. Come back to talk Star Wars. I know we can always do this, so.
I'm always excited to talk Star Wars. I've got the bug. In fact, I went shopping just recently. I went into the biggest used bookstore I've ever been in. They have 3 million books in this store. Like, no kidding. And what did I buy? I bought all movie TV tie-in stuff. And I bought a compilation of the Brian Daley Han Solo books because I've never actually read them. And so I bought those. And my plan is sometime in the next year or so to at least break down or at least read one of them.
Now, this is in Florida, right? So are these all the books that have been confiscated from schools and just, like, put in a warehouse?
I hate you so much. I hate you so much, and I can't talk about this without losing my shit. So we don't need to do that.
All right. Then instead of that, tell the listeners where else they can find you in the podcastosphere in this network.
Well, thank you. I host a show called Cheerscast where I talk about No, I'm all over the network. You can find me primarily on the Justice League International Blahaha podcast and the Once Upon a Geek podcast. Those are both shows of mine that I developed. Show one's about the Justice League, one's about whatever the hell I want to talk about. Might even do a Star Wars episode sometime. And also, you can find me soon more and more on the Justice Society Presents feed. I'll be ramping that up as my JLI feed begins to slow down. And then I'm on a bunch of other shows with Rob, like Who's Who and Digest Cast and Aquaman and Firestorm and lots of different places.
Turn it on Sunday and you'll probably hear you.
That's a fair bet. Or you can find me on, I'm still on X or Twitter or whatever the hell it's called, as Once Upon a Geek, and all the other social media platforms you can find me to.
Very, very cool. All right.
Again, thank you so much for having me. I such emotion and burning love for Star Wars in my heart. I never had the opportunity to talk about it, so this was really exciting. So I've been looking forward to this all week. Thank you very much.
No problem. And listeners, It would be foolish of me to say, you know, we've got another episode coming out soon, but I am in a Star Wars kind of mood lately, so there's more stuff I want to talk about, like the Visions sets of animated shows. The TV show Ahsoka is going to be debuting pretty soon, and there's certainly a lot of stuff about that that I'm going to want to talk about, so it would not be crazy to expect new episodes of Give Me Those Star Wars in the near future, but I promise nothing.
We're actually going to rebrand the show, the Shi'ara Breecast, so watch for that.
There you go. Until then, Give Me Those Star Wars is a proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. Feedback for this show can be left at fireandwaterpodcast.com, or you can email me at rdailypodcast@gmail.com. You can also support shows like this on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/fwpodcast to support your favorite podcasts on the Fire and Water Network. Thanks for listening, and remember, the Force will be with you always.
Welcome back, everybody. We're talking with Ewan McGregor, who you can see in the new Star Wars series, Obi-Wan Kenobi. In Obi-Wan Kenobi, our pal Hayden Christensen returns for the first time as Darth Vader.
Yeah.
What's it like working with Hayden again?
It's lovely to work with Hayden again. We spent such a long time together. We shot episode 2 and 3 in Australia, in Sydney, Australia, back in the day. And so we spent a lot of time on set, and we had a lot of fight training to do, and we spent a lot of time off set. So it was nice to see him again.
Yeah, he's a
It was frightening to see him again, knowing the... I hadn't acted with Darth Vader, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So,
What was it?
And I've been acting a long time. I think I've done a lot of stuff. But the first take with Darth Vader scared the out of me.
Yeah, that's true. It's frightening.
Yeah, we rehearsed, and he didn't have the helmet on, and I was getting made up, and I guess they were sorting him out, and then there was action, and I'm walking down, and I hear something. I turn around, and Vader's coming at me like that. I swear to God, I just about my pants, really.
Yeah, but yeah. I mean, when you're a kid, that is probably one of the scariest villains you see.
That's it, I think. I was like 7 years old again. It was really like, it was really genuine fear.
Fear.
I made horror films and stuff. They're not frightening, but that was.
That was, yeah.